From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, November 27th, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
Maine's Untold Vegetarian History, an exhibit at the Maine Historical Society, documents 300 years of research into the vegetarian movement by Portland Press Herald vegan columnist Avery Yale Camila. With Thanksgiving around the corner, Carol Bousquet explored the exhibit with Camila, who reveals the dark side of the holiday and the prejudice against those promoting a vegetarian lifestyle.
Thanksgiving became an official holiday in 1863. Vegan food columnist Avery Yale Camila says vegetarian turkeys made their debut around the same time.
I trace the first glimmers of this to the 1860s, when I can find newspapers that are making fun of vegetables that have a turkey-ish shape, and they're calling them vegetable turkeys, and they're doing it in a joking way.
Camila says her research also uncovered a more sinister early Thanksgiving in Maine. She tells the story of Father Sebastian Rall, a Jesuit priest and Frenchman who was assigned to the Abenaki agricultural town of what is now Norwich Walk on the Kennebec River in 1722. Rall was an ascetic Christian who practiced self-denial for religious reasons. Camila says he ate a simple vegan diet of cornmeal porridge, roots and nuts, and railed against the encroachment of English settlers who let their livestock eat Abenaki crops. Rawls' complaints to Boston officials were ignored, and over time he was suspected of encouraging the Abenaki resistance.
He was massacred in 1724 when an English militia came up the river and murdered all kinds of people in the town, including women and children. And that massacre was then celebrated with a Thanksgiving feast. It was declared by the governor, celebrated by the settlers.
Camila says this account documents the genocide of Native Americans. Add to that the slaughter of millions of turkeys each year, and she says many vegetarians condemn the holiday outright. Vegetarians were often prominent male figures, Camila says, and not only promoted a plant-based diet, but also took on other more controversial issues. Sylvester Graham, for example, was a national celebrity who arrived in Maine in 1834. He was a Presbyterian minister who marketed Graham flour and bread and lectured on vegetarianism as well as sexual equality and chastity.
If you were a woman in 1834 and you have no legal rights, you have no financial rights, you have no right to your body, and Graham says, hey, not good to have sex, not healthy for you or the man, that is like a freeing message for some women. So this was all very offensive to men who were benefiting from the situation socially, where men had such an upper hand over women and could take advantage of them. So some men really liked that and wanted to keep that going, and so hence there was a riot.
Graham was forced to flee Portland during the riot. The story was carried in newspapers nationwide, but his message endured, an excitement over vegetarianism and Graham bread that would eventually become Graham crackers solidified his position in the vegetarian movement. 3 decades later, Ellen G. White, a native Mainer, was helping to establish the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Battle Creek, Michigan.
So in 1863, the same year Thanksgiving becomes an official holiday, Ellen G. White has a vision. She's a prophet. She has thousands of visions over the course of her life. This vision in 1863, God showed her what humans should be eating, and it was vegetarian plant-based food. She gets that message, and then being a practical Mainer, she realizes that if people are going to eat vegetarian food, 3 things have to happen. It has to be accessible, it has to be affordable, and it has to taste good.
Camila says White enlisted Dr. John Harvey Kellogg and his wife Ella to help her, and they developed peanut butter, breakfast cereal, and plant-based meat.
And then they decide they're going to have a separate company that's going to sell toasted cornflakes, and they're going to add sugar to it. You want to sell a lot of cornflakes, you add sugar. So that's what happened, and Kellogg's is still a major company today.
By the late 19th and early 20th centuries, Camila says commercial development of vegetarian products took off, including a huge canning industry in Maine. beans, blueberries, peas, and corn were all canned here, which gave vegetarians access to good food year-round. Vegetarians Helen and Scott Nearing of Harborside, Maine, were part of the Back to the Land movement in the 60s and 70s. They grew their own food and were celebrated for their recipes and practices. Helen's cookbook, Simple Food for the Good Life, was published in 1980.
It's a humorous book because she was well-known as somebody who didn't like to cook. But she was asked to write a cookbook, and she did. And most of her recipes just have a couple ingredients and like one or two steps. Super simple.
Camilla says Nearing's infamous carrot croakers, made from the pulp of juiced carrots, served with soup and a salad from her garden, won praise from thousands of visitors. In the 70s came the first vegetarian market and restaurant in Portland, according to Camilla. What also came was prejudice against vegetarians and vegans. Camilla says one survey ranked them last, below drug addicts.
When you tell someone you're a vegetarian, you don't have to say anything else. They know what that is. They know that means you don't eat meat. If they're like most Americans, they were fed meat by their mother. And so there's just a psychological reaction that happens that's completely subconscious, where all of a sudden, I've insulted someone's mother because I've called into question the food that she served.
Camilla estimates that just 3 to 10% of the population in Maine is vegetarian. What she hopes visitors take away from the exhibit is to question what they know or have been told about the lifestyle.
One of the most effective ways to erase the significance of something is to never mention it. As we seek to be critical thinkers and evaluate what's going on, like, we need to realize that there are stories that have been deliberately left out and omitted, and we need to seek those out, and it gives us a fuller understanding of the world.
Maine's Untold Vegetarian History exhibit runs to May 17, 2025 at the Maine Historical Society. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Carol Bousquet.
State lawmakers will vote next week on who should serve as Maine's next attorney general. The current attorney general, Democrat Aaron Fry, faces a challenge from within his own party. But as Kevin Miller reports, Republicans are also putting forward a candidate with a long career focused on counter-narcotics.
Maine is the only state in the nation where lawmakers choose the attorney general. And that means whichever party holds the most seats in the legislature typically gets to choose who fills the post. Aaron Fry has served as AG since January of 2019. This year, he's being challenged once again by Democrat Megan Maloney, who is district attorney for Kennebec and Somerset counties. Republicans, meanwhile, plan to nominate Robert Charles, who served as an assistant secretary of state during the George W. Bush administration. Charles focused on counter-narcotics and drug enforcement in that role. He also worked on drug policy as a senior staffer and legal counsel to congressional committees. And if elected, Charles says addressing drug trafficking would be a top priority.
I understand it's an uphill battle, but I'm one of those people who tells others to step up often, and I have done that in the past, and I was Assistant Secretary of State with Colin Powell and did counter-narcotics all over the world and frankly worked with Republicans and Democrats throughout the 1990s and 2000s and after that to tackle this issue.
The House and the Senate will vote on the Attorney General during a joint session next Wednesday. Democrats currently have narrow majorities in both chambers. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
The City of Portland's planning board last night tabled a proposal to expand surface parking at the Portland International Jetport. As Nicola Grisco reports, the proposal still faces scrutiny from airport neighbors who are concerned about the project's environmental impacts.
The plan calls for the paving of two surface lots and about 680 parking spaces. The project would create 280 brand new spaces once the Jetport finishes stormwater system upgrades. Jetport officials say the additional parking is needed because travelers are taking longer trips and are parking their cars for extended periods of time. The new surface lots are also intended to serve as an interim solution until the Jetport can build a larger parking garage. But at a public hearing last night, a majority of residents said the Jetport had not done enough to mitigate the project's impacts on nearby wetlands and woods. Planning board members largely agreed. They acknowledged that the Jetport needs more parking, but directed airport officials to revisit their plans. The board is expected to reconsider the proposal in late January. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nicole Ugrisco.
Maine regulators say they found a way to prevent the state from losing its sole 207 area code, at least for the foreseeable future. The Public Utilities Commission has approved a plan by Consolidated Communications to move 150 centers that designate local numbers into a statewide pool. That effectively unlocks a stockpile of unused 207 numbers from small rural areas that can be used in more populous parts of the state, says Sarah Davis from Consolidated.
When the commission needs new numbers to assign to the next customer, it can pull from anywhere. It can pull from Wittepitlock. It can pull from, you know, places in Aroostook County, which probably are not at full utilization.
Regulators say the change should open up enough numbers to carry Maine through 2050. Holiday travel this week could set a new record, with 80 million Americans set to travel by car, plane, rail, or bus over Thanksgiving, according to AAA. In Maine, the Turnpike Authority expects about a 2% increase in overall Thanksgiving travel between today and Sunday. Today is expected to be the busiest day, with nearly 300,000 vehicles on the road. While travel records could be set across the country, Turnpike Authority spokesperson Rebecca Grover says Maine's busiest days typically come during the peak tourist season.
A sunny Saturday in August, that's our busiest time. So this really doesn't compare to the really busy time.
Meanwhile, the Portland Jetport said it's expecting a 17% increase in passengers compared to last Thanksgiving, but says those numbers would also fall well below peak summer travel. Meanwhile, the Maine Emergency Management Agency is urging motorists to prepare for the first snowfall of the season, expected to arrive Thanksgiving Day. MEMA says the storm could cause slippery roads and poor visibility. Snow is expected across much of the state, with snow and rain along the coast. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow for special Thanksgiving holiday programming on Maine Public Radio from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.